The discrepancy is between an image of yourself and then the reality, which becomes quite shocking and overwhelming and quite shaming. And then you feel humiliated. And this leads to a very stressful state. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Narcissism Decoder. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Mazzella. I have a question for all of you today, which may sound familiar. Do you or someone you know experience unrelenting and persistent feelings of anxiety? Despite your best efforts, traditional methods, medication, and maybe even psychotherapy treatment have proven ineffective in alleviating your anxious feelings. I say this may sound familiar because I raised a very similar question just recently, but I did that about depression. And then it got me thinking about anxiety. And I could say the same thing, different cause, but the same thing, which is there's more here to your anxiety than meets the eye. In my field, this phenomena is often identified as shame stress. Shame stress is a facet that's common among those dealing with narcissism. Without the expertise of a therapist trained who works specifically with personality disorders, this shame stress oftentimes goes undetected and therefore never properly gets treated. All the typical signs of anxiety are the same, but in particular, your anxiety manifests in your need to always perform and show up at 110% because things must be done, in other words, perfectly. It shows up in your procrastination, which in large part is driven by the need to people please, because that's always the most important thing, because that's part of perfectionism, that you need to look a certain way. So therefore, it's hard to get started with a project because there's so much anxiety about how you're going to produce, what you're going to produce. It shows up in your ruminations, which oftentimes go on when you're procrastinating or after you go out. Let's say it looks like this. I shouldn't have said A. Maybe I should have said B. This is going to lead to this and then this, but basically it's a catastrophic way of thinking and your thoughts just begin to spiral and it becomes almost impossible to put them to rest. And then what happens is these thoughts, more often than not, are self-destructive. In other words, there's a self-critical piece to the thought process, leaving you with a feeling that you're so broken or so incompetent that you're not capable. And since you're broken, and something is wrong with you, you may even begin to avoid certain places, people, or social situations that get you anxious. Like if you go out, for instance, you may start thinking, what if no one wants to talk to me? Or even worse, what if I do talk to someone and they think I'm strange? Or they'll figure out that I don't know what I'm talking about, that I'm a phony, or that I don't know how to communicate. Finally, when you get anxious and worried, which is a lot of the time, you think you know why. Oh, I just got anxious because I didn't get a good night's sleep, or because I'm thinking about all the things I need to do for work tomorrow. Or frequently, what I hear is that the anxiety seemingly comes out of nowhere. Oh, I just woke up feeling anxious today. There's no reason. I'm just anxious, or I'm just an anxious person. Now, assuming you have already tried traditional approaches, such as be patient, take deep breaths, wait for the sensations to pass. Imagine soothing situations. Try to learn how to relax. Cut out caffeine. Eat a balanced diet. Exercise regularly. Meditate. Get good sleep. I can keep going, but I think you know what some of these traditional approaches are, especially if you have already done a little bit of research into anxiety. The main point is nothing seems to work in terms of long-term improvement. Why? Why, you may be asking? Because, again, in my biased opinion, from a psychoanalytic perspective, all of these tools and these techniques, these methods, are designed to treat the symptom. What's the symptom? The symptom is the anxiety, which in my field is oftentimes considered the outcome of the problem. I am encouraging you to consider that the real problem, or let me say at least one of the real problems. Like I mentioned earlier, anxiety is very complicated, and there are many things that lead up to one getting anxious. But what I need to get at here is that which lies below the manifest presentation. The manifest presentation is the anxiety, but I'm always thinking, what is the latent meaning? What's going on underneath the anxiety? What's driving the anxiety? And from this one perspective that I'm sharing with all of you, this is known as shame stress. In my practice, I've discovered that many anxious people aim for perfection. And when you don't meet that ideal state, a few things typically happen. And these things are not necessarily experienced consciously. In other words, they're not on your mind, but they might be. Tell me if they sound familiar. You cannot forgive yourself for your mistakes. And that's that critical voice that I mentioned earlier that will begin to punish you. Or you're embarrassed. You're ashamed. You feel humiliated about some way that you behaved or didn't behave, something you said or you didn't say, or how you didn't meet some standard of perfection. The standard, of course, is always in your mind. So yes, you're hearing me correctly. What I am suggesting is that the anxiety is not the problem. And I've discovered over and over with close work with the anxious individuals that I treat in my practice, that the anxiety is triggered by a thought process. So an individual who is prone to shame stress might find themselves burdened by an overwhelming sense of responsibility, perfectionism, and an inability to forgive themselves for even minor transgressions. Stated differently, shame stress occurs when you experience a puncture in this illusion of perfection, of complete acceptance and approval, and the self encounters a discrepancy between an ideal image that you have in your mind of the way you should be accepted, the way your wife or girlfriend should respond to you with overwhelming joy of something that you've offered or something that you said, for instance, and then the painful reality of falling short of that. The discrepancy is between an image of yourself and then the reality, which becomes quite shocking and overwhelming and quite shaming. And then you feel humiliated. And this leads to a very stressful state. Okay, so let's say this conceptual framework, in other words, this way of conceptualizing anxiety is resonating with you. Now you may be asking about treatment. How do I treat shame stress? Here's a simple but common example. Imagine this scenario. This is a fictitious patient. This patient comes in reporting that he recently went on a date with a woman that he really admired. During the date, he became quite anxious. They were in a crowded room, and he felt that there was not enough oxygen in the room. He started to feel like he was suffocating, and he became increasingly anxious as he thought about how he would manage the remainder of the date. Did he leave? Did he cut the date short? Should he excuse himself? How would that make him look? He wondered. Should he tell her he was anxious? All of this was going through his mind as his anxiety was mounting and mounting. Now, luckily, we've done a little work on this. So he used the breathing techniques that we explored in a prior session and was able to move himself from a sympathetic to a parasympathetic state, rest and relax. So now he was beginning to settle down a little bit. And then that was it. That was the story. And he was ready to move on. And he began to talk about some unrelated event from the week. Now, in terms of technique and how we work with this, I needed to slow him down and ask him, can we go back over this again? What happened after you calmed yourself down? So then he told me that he found a bathroom. And when he was in the bathroom, I said, what was going on? What were your thoughts? He said, I have to hurry. I don't want to keep my date waiting. He said, I was getting very anxious again. I said, what would happen if you kept her waiting? She would think something was wrong. What would she think? She would think something was wrong with me. So right here, you could see it. And this is what I was referring to earlier. This is the shame and humiliation that gets him worked up, that gets him anxious. He's going to be judged. You see the word, something is wrong with him. He's not perfect. It's not the perfect date. And what's going to happen as we play this out, she's not going to want another date. In other words, he's going to be rejected. That's what we came to discover. And that's why he said, I didn't want her to know that I was so anxious. So in short, what I helped him begin to express was what? That he wanted and he expected a quote-unquote perfect date, and he should have no limitations. He should never keep her waiting, because then that means he has a limitation and something's wrong and she's going to not want to see him again. But we can't even stop there. We need to keep going, because if you're looking for lasting change, even this is not enough. It's a good start. But I say to him, let's go over this again. See, because in the type of treatment that I offer, at least in my practice, this is a psychodynamic treatment. And the goal is not merely symptom relief. You see, if the goal was just to help him manage his anxiety, I mentioned earlier that he was ready to keep going and talk about something else, as if the mission was accomplished and this was done. But this was not done, because this would happen again and again and again. And it's fine, by the way. If he wants to continue, or if you want to continue to use the relaxation techniques, the breathing techniques, you could see sometimes, not always by the way, but sometimes they're effective, but they're not going to lead to long-term results or lasting change until you could get at some of this other stuff and really help one begin to understand what's driving this anxiety. And in this case, what I'm proposing to all of you in this example is that it's a state of shame, humiliation. So we need to go further. So if we're looking for some kind of change in our personality, and by the way, the anxiety is part of our personality. So this is why I'm talking about this kind of anxiety in a podcast on narcissism, because narcissism is part of the personality, as is this anxiety. So we can't stop there. So what I talk to him about is I say to him, can we go back a little bit further? What were your thoughts leading up to the date? Was any of this on your mind? And he starts laughing. And he says, yeah, of course. Of course it was. I said, tell me about that laugh. He's like, I'm laughing because I was already anxious before the date and I was anxious about getting anxious. I said, what were you picturing? What was going through your mind when you were getting ready for the date? He said, I knew we were going to a place that was going to be crowded and I was imagining, et cetera, et cetera. I won't go into all the details here, but in short, what we came to discover that before the date even started, he was already anxious. But what was he anxious about? He was so anxious about being ashamed and humiliated. And more importantly, and this is a big piece of the work and something that I'll have to speak to at greater length at some point, is he's afraid of the critical voice. See, because it's the critical voice that's very hard on him. And it's the critical voice is what really shames him. It's not his date, but this emanates from within. Anyway, I hope I was able to demonstrate to all of you how the key to getting in control of your anxiety, what I think is really necessary, again, in my biased opinion as a psychoanalyst, is to move from heightened anxiety while out, you know, in public or in a crowded place to the underlying cause of this anxiety, identifying a fear of not appearing as perfect. And furthermore, how embarrassing. Then we need to start working on that critical voice. What in an earlier episode I called the punitive superego. But that's a little more complicated and we don't have time to get into that today because I want to begin to wrap it up. But in short, the therapeutic interventions focused on helping him identify and address the underlying anxiety, the shame state that's always lurking behind the scenes until you can expose it and get it out of you. You can start using some of these tools and techniques immediately. The immediate goal when you're anxious is always to return yourself to a parasympathetic state, a more regulated state of mind, because then and only then can the real thinking begin. And that's the most important piece of this, is to be able to engage your mind. You hear me say that at the end of every episode. It is at the critical moment that you need to slow down and consider, am I really feeling anxious right now because I'm in a crowded place? Did I really just wake up with anxiety? and nothing triggered this emotional state, you could go further. Did I let myself down? Will I not come across as perfect? Did I not come across as perfect? Was there anything that happened that left me feeling ashamed, embarrassed, or humiliated? As you can see, in this simple example that I just gave, the work goes way beyond breathing and relaxation techniques. But to do this, we also need to address and confront that critical voice that's driving the anxiety, that voice that expects perfection, and as I hope I demonstrated today, is related to the shame state. If you want to learn more about the various facets of narcissism, please be sure to subscribe to this podcast. Or if you're looking for an individualized treatment plan, feel free to reach out to me directly. And as always, look, I know this stuff is undoubtedly complex. So if I said anything today that confused you, as always, please reach out and share your questions with me. You know, I always say this, I would be delighted to hear from you. And if I don't respond directly, I'll be sure to pick it up in a future podcast. Okay, we have to stop there for now. But until next time, engage your mind, not your ego. Bye for now. Disclaimer alert. The Narcissism Dakota podcast is provided for general information purposes only. The content presented in this podcast is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any psychological condition related to narcissism. The content on this podcast should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. For specific advice pertaining to narcissism or any other psychological condition, you could reach me directly. I am an experienced mental health practitioner who is always taking on new patients. If you would just like a consultation, I can do that too.